Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
We are born free, and we will die free. The time in between, though, that's complicated.
In that time, governments, institutions, and our egos will limit our ability to find true freedom in this life. These are real stories of real people overcoming the odds, persevering in justice, and unlocking their potential. Welcome to Finding Freedom. Here's your host, John Oderman.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Finding Freedom right here on the Lions of Liberty Network. And we're closing in on the end of 2022. Hard to believe this year has flown by. A lot of changes this year, a lot of changes at Lions of Liberty, a lot of changes in the world. The more things change, though, the more they stay the same. And you can always find this show, Finding Freedom, every single Monday. You can always find Mean Age Daydream, Brian McWilliams Show, every single Wednesday. And you can always find something from Lions of Liberty on Friday. It might be Meme Wars. It might be a show with Robbie the Fire Bernstein and Brian McWilliams. It might be just a random interview that we decide to throw up. It might be a Libertarians in Liberty Rooms Drinking Liquor episode. It could be anything. But for the most part, you're always going to get three shows from Lions of Liberty here on this feed. And I always like to mention there's the Lions of Liberty Network feed. I love that you're listening there. There's also the Finding Freedom solo feed where you get just my show. I think that feed is perfect for episodes that maybe you just want to zero in on just, you know, my type of content, which is, you know, based on entrepreneurship, self-improvement, faith, and all that good stuff. So subscribe to both, subscribe to one or the other. I really don't care as long as you just subscribe and leave a 5-star rating and a nice little review. I appreciate that. I'm going to get into the show in a minute. Going to introduce my guest in just a minute. I just want to talk about for a second just how amazing podcasting is in connecting people. If I just think back to my last two episodes, this one and the one previous with Vin Armani, with Cyprian, my last two guests, the distance, how far away they are physically is remarkable. Cyprian in Saipan, and my guest today in Sri Lanka. And it's amazing. We're able to connect. We're able to talk. These time zone differences, we're able to work it out. It's great that I have a flexible schedule with my day job. I'm able to do some things differently. But it's just remarkable. I mean, sometimes like how is this possible? How am I talking to these people? And I'm able to bring their incredible minds to you and ask them questions, and I can learn and you can learn as well. So it's incredible stuff. Just, I don't know. I just wanted to put that out there. Hope you enjoy today's show. Let's get to it. All right. Welcome to another episode of Finding Freedom. I am joined here today by Danana Fernando. He is the CEO of the Sri Lanka-based Advocata. It's a free market think tank. And he's a longtime critic of big government and an expert on Sri Lanka's ongoing economic crisis. He just published an op-ed column in Newsweek, which I will link to on the show notes page. It's explaining how socialist policies have failed Sri Lanka and why Americans should be wary of their increasing popularity in the United States. Danana, welcome to Finding Freedom.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. And obviously, with you being in Sri Lanka and myself in the U.S., obviously a big time difference. So thanks for being gracious with the scheduling, and we were able to get that worked out. So happy about that. I think a good place to start. Obviously, The majority of my audience, I would assume, probably does not know a whole lot about Sri Lanka. I myself do not know a whole lot about Sri Lanka. So maybe kind of to set up the interview, first, maybe if you could talk about yourself and your own experiences, sort of just growing up in Sri Lanka. You don't have to go in depth, but just give people an idea of maybe the differences between U.S. and Sri Lanka.
Thanks, John. So Sri Lanka is in the Indian Ocean. I think many people know where India is. So it's slightly, we are called ourselves the Pearl of Indian Ocean. So if you look at the map of India, the edge is like a necklace and we are like a small island, like the pearl. So that's why we are called the Pearl of Indian Ocean. We are a small country, 65,000 square kilometers, 20 million population. That's the background. And average GDP was, earlier it was about $3,600 per capita GDP. And now with the economic crisis, it has dropped to about $3,000. And I'm working for Advocata Institute, which is a public policy think tank, which I'm a founding member. And we incorporated Advocata in 2016, because in my parts of the world, the ideas like freedom and allowing freedom to work, allowing markets to work, was not a common concept when we initiated it. But we have made some progress, but it's quite sad, and my heart melts to see the economic crisis that we are going through. Our economy is contracting, according to the IMF prediction, about 8 to 9% in the coming years. So that's a little bit of the background. I haven't studied anywhere else. I'm completely a local boy. I pretty much in my entire life, I have been in Sri Lanka. I studied bioscience and biochemistry. I pretty much self-studied economics, and I was very interested about these market-based ideas and liberty and freedom. So that's how I initiated with few of other like-minded people Advocate Institute in 2016.
Awesome. Yeah. When your work came to my notice, and it's interesting how things happen with timing. Actually, in the U.S., I've actually known a few people from Sri Lanka, and just fantastic people. My daughter's preschool administrator at our local church is born and raised in Sri Lanka. Just a fantastic family. And then just recently, one of my colleagues, a new colleague who I just met where I work in my my corporate job, he's from Sri Lanka, just a really interesting guy, and fascinated in that he tells me that he grew up with a pet elephant. I don't know how common that is in Sri Lanka. I hear that's something that you really can't do anymore. I'm not sure how old he is, but how timing works out. I just heard that story, and then I saw your email. I'm like, wow. I got to have this guy on to learn more about Sri Lanka.
Yeah, it may be true because currently, I think with the regulation, it's not allowed. But if you come to Sri Lanka, we have in August, there's called the Asala Perahara, which is in Kandy, which is central parts where you see elephants using as this element to show respect to the Temple of Tooth Relic, which is one of the secret places or Buddhism-connected secret places in Sri Lanka. So many years ago, I think people had an option to have, elephants, and still it is there's a licensing system where you can have an elephant as a pet, but it's a very expensive exercise. And also, it is not very common, but there are people who does it. So, what your friend may have said, there'll be truth in it, yeah, because that option was available.
Yeah, well, definitely a very, very unique thing to be able to share with people. So let's talk about you, because I think growing up in the U.S., people do, and maybe not so much today as 10, 20 years ago, but being able to be educated and learning about free market ideas used to be at least pretty common in the U.S. As socialism creeps in more over here into our public schools, maybe that's becoming not as common. I'm curious about your own journey in Sri Lanka. So the education system there, the education that you received, Were free market ideas taught? Were socialist ideas taught? How did that work?
Yeah, in Sri Lanka, even in the constitution, our country's name goes as Democratic Socialist Republic of Sri Lanka. So the socialist part is in the constitution itself. And pretty much the ideas are more skewed towards socialism, I would say, because we have a history of more than 2,500 years. But we got the independence from 1948 from British. But before that, we have been a colony of Portuguese. That's probably my name comes Fernando. And then we were also a colony of Dutch. And then it was from with British. So after 1948, now it's more than 70 years, pretty much people were depending on government because there was a massive government sector and people expected everything to be done by the government, from providing from, we call it, from birth to death and even after death. Everything has to be taken care of the government. For an example, when you were born, in a public hospital, which the entire healthcare system is mainly managed by public hospitals. Some time ago, only the private hospitals were allowed. And then when you are schooling, your primary education, your secondary education, your universities, it's all mainly public. And even private universities, now there are a few private universities, but still, like private medical colleges, some other private sector universities are not allowed. And then you also have that's the education, and even thereafter, once you get graduated, again you join the government civil servant or the government jobs, and then again you are depending on the government. And when you retire, of course, you get a pension, and that is also with the government. So altogether, from beginning to the end, you are with the government, and at the same time, even after you passes away, your pension, your family members can get the, also they will be entitled for the pension. So it's from beginning to the end, it's mainly the government, and we have a massive government sector. According to the South Asian numbers, for every 14 to 16 people, we have one government employee. So that's the scale of our government expansion. So I myself come from the same background. I have studied in a semi-government school, and I studied in a public university, bioscience and biochemistry. But my difference was I didn't enter the government sector. I worked for the private sector, and then I initiated this think tank with a few others.
Was that just a decision you made? Was there something, some experience you had that kind of opened your eyes to the free market, or how did that
absolutely
work?
Absolutely. So I was very lucky to associate with few other people who actually had these sort of ideas, especially with someone who have been overseas, who have been back in Sri Lanka. So they actually shared these ideas when I was a schoolboy. So I was very interested. Okay, how does it work? And then I got interested, I engaged, and there were opportunities to engage with like-minded people. And that's how this entire thing started. And then I got to know Professor Razin Sali, who is a lecturer or a professor at National University of Singapore. And he's half Sri Lankan. And he has been a very well-recognized, well-known trade specialist. So he, when I associated with him, he connected with so many people. And then I got to know about this idea, and I explored more. And the more I explored, I was so interested and fascinated with this view and the worldview. And when I compared with Sri Lanka, I found it. Okay, this is definitely a better way than the government sector. But I must admit, my parents both are government servants. So they are pretty much coming from the same background. But I think I am slightly taking a different route. So that's how I joined the Liberty Freedom Movement, and I'm very honored, and I'm very happy that it happened in that way.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Growing up in a socialist country, and then still being able to find exposure to the ideas of freedom and liberty, and then taking the initiative to really start this think tank, right? Pretty amazing stuff. So, I'm curious. You said you had some friends and were exposed to these ideas. Were there specific books or lectures or videos or anything that comes to mind that really it really helped you along that journey?
Absolutely. So I was a big fan of Marginal Revolution University. So I've been going through all courses. That's one way that I learned economics. And also I was a great admirer of a basic economics book by Thomas Sowell. That was one book. And I was associated with Tom Palmer and pretty much all his books about liberty was quite fascinating. I was lucky to listen to him, his lectures, his worldview. So those are little things which come top of the mind, which really shaped my thinking. But of course, people like Professor Azin Salih in Sri Lanka, there's a good column in every Monday from Dr. W. A. Vijayavadana. So he pretty much, rather than pushing the ideology, he basically brings the practical scenario of what's happening in the economy. So when I went, he writes this for more than 10 years. So when I was reading it, I was able to connect it with Milton Friedman, with Hayek and everyone. Okay, this is how the economy works. So I see it more as a science rather than, of course, there's an ideology behind it. But for me, it's like quantum physics or it's like gravitational forces. There's a way that things work. And whether we like it or not, that's how it works. And we have to allow that to work, allow to markets to work, and allow the ecosystem to move forward. And that's how I see it. And also, I'm coming from a science background, so I pretty much connect with this physics and chemistry and biochemistry. So that's how I see it. And more specifically, those books, those lectures, those videos, those websites, and associating with Atlas Network. They have been a kind supporter of us when we initiated Advocata Institute. So all that together, which was also with self-studying and meeting people, and with Atlas as a broader network. So when you go for their conferences, you meet like people from 100 countries doing kind of similar stuff, and issues are common, and the failures are same. And then you get to realize, oh my goodness, this is the same thing. When you follow the wrong prescription, there is no way. It's the same results that you see. And I have seen it like in 40, 50 countries. And when you also prosper, you again see the good example. So that was my journey.
Yeah, I think people, and especially in the United States, you know, we've been so spoiled by really being in a position where a lot of these socialist policies that have really caused a lot of havoc and despair in smaller countries, the U.S. has been able to, not be exposed to them because of our position in the world and our position with the dollar as the world's reserve currency. And essentially, the dollar being backed by this gigantic military has really allowed for, all of this malinvestment and just huge government growth that we've experienced over the past few decades in the United States. But that's probably a topic for another podcast. I want to dig into Sri Lanka here, since you are an expert and you live there, of course. So maybe a good place to start, kind of just talking about pre-COVID Sri Lanka, if you can just kind of paint like an economic picture of how things were before the COVID pandemic hit.
John, in Sri Lanka, in my view, it was always bad, but it accelerated after COVID and after the debt default. The best example is compare with Singapore, countries like Singapore. I know Singapore is like very small, but can you believe Singapore has taken Sri Lanka as a model for development? And they pretty much, of course, there are a lot of flaws in the Singaporean system, but they adhered with global trade and markets at the initial stages. And as a result, now Sri Lanka had a very strong kind of private sector in 1970s, and we expropriated the private sector properties. So basically, property rights, which is one of the main concepts, has been completely kept aside. So as a result, all these oil companies and all these private companies just left to Singapore. And Singapore was just ready. Lee Kuan Yew was just ready, embracing them, providing the entire framework. And as a result, Singapore developed and Sri Lanka completely went on the other side. So since 1948, since independence, we were doing okay. But we really didn't do any proper market reforms.
If I can just jump in there for a minute, because I'm curious, just to dig in on that point, the difference between Sri Lanka and Singapore, the different, obviously, economic policies allowing for a little more growth or a lot more growth in Singapore. Generally, what do the people of Sri Lanka think about that? What do they blame that on when they look at a country like Singapore? Do they point to, you know, the government? You know, is there a large segment of the population in Sri Lanka that's angry at the government and its overreach, or what do you think
so
about
the thing
that?
Good question, John. So the thing is, while we see Singapore was progressing, people, since we have a large government sector workforce, which has been building over and over again, this government sector workforce has been a main vote block for main political parties. So none of them really had the courage to admit that expanding the government is the problem. So as a result, while the markets not operating, the markets is the problem, people try to think by just increasing the, they think by having expanding government, you can increase the efficiency of people. So they always blame saying, okay, the government workers are not efficient, they are not honest, they are corrupt, and if you appoint honest people, you can be productive, you can be prosperous. Without realizing, the more you expand the government, it's obvious you get more corruption. The more you expand the government, it's obvious that your productivity and efficiency and effectiveness and impact would be low. Without realizing that, I always say, no, let's bring some superpower, Superman, and let's appoint correct people. And that has been the debate for a long time. Without realizing, look, there's institutions that has to be in place, and there has to be an incentive for people to work and earn a better living. So completely neglecting that. And unfortunately, the political parties are fueling the wrong ideology, because that's definitely helpful for their political campaigning. So every government, every leader who comes to power, they don't even tap or talk about the government sector. They always say, don't worry, we will make sure that the government sector is secured. And in fact, they provide more and more jobs, even for unqualified people. So it goes from like the lowest ever lowest rank to the most senior rank. So that's that's how people see it. But even before COVID, so in 1970 we had a very strict closed economy from 1970 to 1977. So during that time there were price controls. Sorry, I wasn't born. We did a documentary on this. So we spoke to a lot of people who lived during that time. So people say they have been in long queues. If you are getting married, can you believe you have to go and take a permit with a confirmation of the number of guests that you are inviting? And for the wedding suit, because there's massive import controls to save forex. So if you want to tailor a jacket and a suit, you have to go with your wedding invitation to tailor a jacket in Sri Lanka during that time. So we have gone through that difficult period in 1972. All our main indicators dropped. There were malnutrition have been seen in the country. And in 1977, the economy was slightly open because, of course, you know, when people take such strict measures, you realize that it can't go. It can go for like 4 or 5 years with the most difficult time. And then it automatically explodes. It's not rocket science. And then in 1977, when the economy was slightly liberalized, but it was a very, you know, half-hearted attempt. It was only mainly the imports and exports were liberalized. There were labor reforms that hasn't been done. There were many other sectors which kept as it is. So as a result, we couldn't really reap the maximum benefit of the liberalization process. And since then, also we had a long war of 30 years long war. So as a result, we had a very difficult time with that. So I generally, my reading is, even if you forget all those 1970s, in the recent history, we had a lot of unfortunate events I call it misfortunate and mismanagement both together. As a result, in 2015, there was a massive bond scam that happened in the central bank. And in 2016-17, there was a drought. In 2018, there was a constitutional coup. In 2019, there was this Easter bombing, if you recall. In 2020,
can we back up to the constitutional coup? So what exactly happened with the constitutional coup?
Yeah, so there were two prime ministers claim the prime ministerial post at the same time. That's what happened. So basically,
How does that happen?
Yeah, so when there was a new government came into power in 2015. So before that, according to the constitution, we have an executive presidency system. So the president has pretty much all sorts of powers. We call it, the president has powers even to convert a man to a woman. He can do anything pretty much, anything with the constitutional powers. So, but in 2015, they brought some reforms where some of these executive powers were delegated to the prime minister. But what happened was in the initial coalition, the prime minister and president were in the same page, or they were in a coalition. But in the middle of it, there were cracks appeared. So as a result, the former president was appointed as the prime minister by the president elected. And the then president then claimed, okay, he doesn't have powers to appoint a new prime minister, because the prime minister can only be appointed through the parliament. And then they went for a voting and a no confidence motion in parliament. So there was this going back and forth. And finally, the president who was appointed by the prime minister who was appointed by the president again resigned, and it was resolved, but it took about 2-3 months to settle everything. So as a result, the entire our credit rating downgraded, and the economy was pretty much in a standstill. So that's what happened, and that again shows, and it went to the Supreme Court, and there was a process, but Supreme Court actually is one institute that was quite upheld accountability and justice at that time, but there are so many loopholes in our system. So that was mainly the operation of Sri Lanka before that. So anyway, there's this theory called very briefly of the sumo wrestler versus like a normal wrestler. So Sri Lanka was always vulnerable. Like a sumo wrestler, if you look at the outer appearance, it's like big and strong. But in reality, sumo wrestlers are not strong. It's like the normal, flexible wrestlers are the stronger ones. Even if you look at their life expectation, sumo wrestlers' life expectation is like generally a few years lower than the normal wrestler. So Sri Lanka also had the same problem. We were always vulnerable, but there were multiple triggers in that few years. So as a result, everything went wrong. Everything was a mess. It was a very difficult time, and it's still a difficult time. We are running on a full quota of 20 liters for a vehicle every week, and there are power cuts. As I mentioned, I'm not in my home, because my home experiences a power cut at this particular time frame, and there were power cuts went for about 6-8 hours earlier because of good rains. Our power composition is mainly from hydro and fuel and coal. So as a result, because of good rains, now the power cuts have come down to for about 2 hours, 3 hours. But again, with the weather patterns, it can expand. So that's very briefly
Because of good rain, they're able to produce more with the hydro. That's essential.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. But with the dry season, again, it becomes difficult, because we don't have dollars to import fuel and essentials. I mean, our country has having very strict import controls. Vehicles imports have been curtailed for, I think, for about more than 2-3 years, about 2 years. And all the imported. There are medicine shortages because you really don't have money to import. It was pretty bad earlier. There were gas shortages. Gas is like the LP gas is one of the main energy sources using for cooking. So basically people who lived in apartments really didn't have an option because they ran out of gas. And all the restaurants industry, they were in big trouble because they didn't have gas to run their restaurants, including the five-star hotels. So it was that bad. So that is why I always warn the US people, look, if you have a big government, if you don't have the correct institutions, and if you allow the government sector to expand, you are definitely in the wrong track. And it's just a matter of time. You may experience a short-term entertainment, but the results is devastating.
Yeah, and I think in the U.S., since we've been insulated for the reasons I mentioned before, a lot of people think, well, you know, what happens in these other countries can never happen here. I mean, just in the U.S., though, just if we look back the past 2 years, so year-over-year inflation, if we go back to like last October, I think we're 8%, almost 8%. Then the year prior to that, it's another 7 or 8%. So looking at 2 years, 15% inflation in Sri Lanka, and I think this number is correct. I think I pulled it from the Newsweek article that you wrote. Year-over-year inflation, I think from October, was 66%. How do people deal with that? I mean, that is obviously wages are going up that quickly. Maybe the government wages are. I don't know. But so, what has that done to people in Sri Lanka?
Yeah, John, there was this theory of modern monetary theory has been adhered by our central bank. So they said, no, you can print money. There's no relationship between money printing or like quantitative expansion with inflation. And they also asked, like, they said, okay, this number of money printed when they were printing, and look at next month inflation. No inflation. We said, yes, absolutely. Of course, when you expanded the money in this month, it's not going to, you know, your inflation won't go up in the next day. It will take time to credit cycles to activate, and it will... completely. And it's not like US. You know, you have at least a reserve currency. I would say in US you shouldn't do it, but at least you have some margin that you can do it. But in my country, when we use our own currency, which is not pegged to the dollar, when you increase the money supply, you are getting a double whammy. Because one side your inflation is going up, on the other side your forex reserves or like your imports are increasing automatically, because when you increase more money supply, people, those money will go behind, of course, imports. So you are drying your forex, and you are increasing, and you have to then depreciate the currency, and then inflation it's like a vicious cycle. So now I think you are seeing a slightly decent number. 70%, I know 60-70% is a bad number. But at one point, it was almost about 100%. And you know, these are official numbers. The actual numbers are much higher than that. And according to Professor Steve Hagg, it was at one point 117%. So basically, pretty much everyone's wealth has been deteriorated, including the government workers. So that's what I'm saying. By this government expansion, the biggest harm has been done to the government people, unfortunately. Because look at what has happened to their pensions. Now, their earlier pensions is worth of like one-third of it. Now, even if they retire after working 20, 30 years, when they hit 55, 60 years, when they, you know, they are pretty much trapped. They are like in jail because now they are all the retirement numbers. I mean, it's as a value, it remains the same. But the actual value, the purchasing power has come down by two-thirds. So you can't really afford the medicines. Your pension basically means nothing. So your entire work contribution, which you did for 25 to 30 years, has absolutely gone, it has become worthless. And you have pretty much wasted your entire career by having this number of inflation. And not many people earn a dollar salary. I mean, those who are earning a dollar salary are who are working abroad, who are sending remittances. So that's why I said it's unfair for everybody, including the government servants itself. Actually, the government servant should come to street and say, look, you should stop recruiting people to the government sector and you should shrink the government sector, because it's very unfair for the capable people who are in the government and to run even the necessary operations. So it's a difficult time. I mean, the poverty rates are pretty much more than 40%. And 40%. It is a tough time. And there's malnutrition and there's underweightage for kids has been reported. Pretty much what I see, I mean, you won't see homeless people like in US. Let me be very clear. But of course, people really? May go into bed without having one or two meals. Even in my home, let me give you an example. So I'm an executive level employee, even a think tank. So in my home, earlier we cooked 3 curries. We made a collective decision to bring it to, earlier it was 4, we brought it to 2 for 2 reasons. One is for inflation, because I was mainly hit by the food inflation. Because earlier if I spent like in my currency about 30,000 rupees, now it has gone to about, it was about 20,000 rupees, now it's for 45 to 50,000 rupees. And also because of the LP gas issue, because we are cooking 4 curries means you have to use LP gas for 4 curries. Let's say we said, okay, let's bring it down for 2 and maybe go for a salad or something like that. Because otherwise you really can't afford gas. I mean, gas prices went up by 3 times, 300%. And even I'm okay to have 300% gas, increase gas prices if you can't find gas. Forget a gas cylinder, you have to be in a queue, you have to be in like for weeks in a line if you're lucky only you will get it. So in my case also, my family agreed to cut down 2 curries. I mean, of course, I think we will be in the nutritional levels, we should be fine. But if it's difficult for some, I'm a middle class person, I'm not a billionaire. So if it's difficult for someone like me who is a middle class person, you can understand how it for a poor person.
Yeah. Where does Sri Lanka import their LP gas from? Do you know? Is it US? Is it?
It was also affected with the, it was not from US. I think it's mainly from India. Don't hold me onto this.
From India.
If I remember right, it's India, because I think India supported us. But of course, the Ukraine war also affected, because the gas prices went up because of Russia-Ukraine war.
It's really thrown the entire market, thrown the whole market into chaos with the U.S. sanctions on Russia, which
and I think we
crazy,
also,
but I don't see it. I don't see any in sight. It's a very very bad thing for the world. What's happening? The whole situation in Ukraine and Russia and the interventions from the EU and the US are not helping anything at all. So one thing I did definitely want to talk to you about. So you talked about this large government sector in Sri Lanka, but the private sector and entrepreneurship does not make up much of what people do. I think 1.5% of Sri Lankans are entrepreneurs, and I'm curious. Do you think that number? Do you see signs of it maybe increasing in the future with what's happening now? Are people starting to see through this? Or are they starting to see this big government for what it is, causing problems?
John, the problem is why the entrepreneur numbers are low. Now, Sri Lankans don't understand economy is nothing but solving problems. For an example, the microphone that you use is solving a problem. So you have someone has to produce which solves your problem. So in the Sri Lankan context, we don't solve anyone's problems. We are just expanding the government. And unfortunately, the entrepreneurs are not allowed to solve problems. Entrepreneurs are not anyone like superior. They are just trying to solve someone's problem and make it a win-win. So the government is in every sector. if you tell any industry, there will be a government intervention or government organization who runs it. For an example, energy, pretty much government, and also a monopoly. Oil distribution, government. There's 17% for one private company, but it's pretty much a duopoly. In hotel industry, in education, in healthcare, in retail, everywhere it's government. So when the government is becoming bigger and bigger, basically you're shrinking the space for entrepreneurs because they don't really allow a private person to operate. Because if you allow the private person to operate, you have a massive regulation, you basically cut him off. You really can't enter the market. So it's obvious that the entrepreneur numbers are coming down because how can you enter the market in the first place? So government is in airline industry, catering, everything, pretty much everything, everywhere.
That's catering? That's the government's doing, yeah, doing they're, food they're, catering?
Yeah, they are in the aviation industry, the catering, they have a catering unit.
Wow.
But of course, they are in the hotel industry. Can you believe a hotel being maintained by the government? A hotel, like, you know, why? And they are in the cashew business. You know, they're selling cashew.
It's crazy just to speak on hotels for a minute, because a hotel, I mean, that's like the ultimate customer service experience. You know, the hotel is trying to cater to the guests to make them comfortable, you know, the most comfortable rooms to you know, bring room service. And government is the opposite of that. It's remarkable.
So that's the problem. And they are also loss-making. And even, can you believe, the monopolies are loss-making, the government monopolies. Of course, there are pricing issues and all that, but it is unbelievable. So that's why I'm very concerned when there's big government in anywhere in the world. Sri Lankan people, it's not me. The entire Sri Lankan people have suffered from this big government. So it is expanding, and of course, when you have that sort of a very influential big government, it's very difficult to shrink it, because from there onwards, everyone wants to strengthen it further. Because, you know, people, when they have without hard working, when they are just earning money, very unlikely they will compromise it. They really don't want to work hard. They want the same income. So it is a tough decision. It's very difficult to change it. So that's why I say don't move there first. Because if you move to that extreme corner, it's very difficult to come back. And it's very painful. And it brings political instability and all sorts of things. So if you are having a small government, please don't consider expanding it. Because it causes so many problems. And even in Sri Lanka, our biggest expenditure is on military. But our people don't understand. Biggest budget item doesn't mean your national security strengthened. Now, for an example, I don't use a personal vehicle, but mainly those who are using a personal vehicle get only 20 liters of petrol. So even imagine if there's a foreign threat coming in, you really don't have fuel to pump your defense vehicles. So what are we talking as like the national security? Because by expanding the size of the government, basically you have diluted the national security. Because by just printing money and pumping it to the budget doesn't strengthen your national security. It in fact dilutes it. That is what people need to realize. But also I must also say, now the inflation while we having all these issues, when countries like yours make bad decisions, it's like a triple whammy on us. Because when the US inflation goes up, my goodness, we are completely crushing. Because then our exports are dropping and it's becoming very difficult. Our exchange rate is depreciating. So it becomes a very difficult time. So as superpowers, you guys have a bigger responsibility because your decisions are affecting the entire world. Always, I think the policymakers in US and developed countries should keep in mind the impact that they bring to poor people in many other nations when they make bad policy decisions.
So what's the path forward, you think, in Sri Lanka? I mean, do you think there is, and obviously you're working for a think tank, so you're I'm sure. I mean, I think you almost have to be optimistic when you're working in this field. But what do you see in the future? What do you see in the next 5-10 years for Sri Lanka?
Yeah, John, I'm optimistic because, as you know, as Milton Friedman says, when there's crisis, there's opportunity for people to change. Mm-hmm. I think that's what the role that we have been doing as Advocata, because this crisis is people have been, I think, reflecting because they know we can't move like this because we are always already in the wrong track. So we can't really move like this. So there are some reforms taking place. At least there's a discussion. More openness on reforms, openness by the people for reforms, but the way forward is very bumpy. I mean, when you have a sovereign default, at least it takes about 10 years to recover because you have always tarnished your image and economy is shrinking at 9%. It's still shrinking. So again, it shrinks and people are leaving to other countries like yours. Then your capable people to run it, we really don't have. So as a result, and capital is leaving the country because no one really wants to come and do business in these sort of conditions. So the recovery process is very slow. But the good thing is, the way forward is we have to go for these hard reforms. We have to allow the private sector to take over to run the economy. But it doesn't mean our private sector is perfect. We have to allow the markets to work. We have to be market-oriented rather than business-oriented. When the markets are working, it will, because it's a matter of resources, maximizing, optimally using our resources. So when the markets mm-hmm. allow to work, when the government slowly becoming strong but limited, strong government, and when you allow the private sector to work, that's the way forward. That's how it has been. Sorry, I'm experiencing power cut.
Did you just lose power?
Absolutely. So I'm on my hotspot, so my internet connection is better. But sorry about the power situation. Okay, it came back again.
Okay. Well, that's what you're living through over there. So you had to be able to see that in real time. And you know, the U.S. is on that path. I mean, I don't think a lot of people here realize how quickly, you know, things could happen, things could devolve. Before I let you go, I want to give you a minute to plug your think tank, to plug your social medias, if you want to, or really anything else that you've worked on that you'd like to share with my audience.
Thanks, John. So please follow us on advocata.org. And on Facebook, we are as Advocata Institute. We have, it's not relevant to your audience. We have also a vernacular social media page called Advocata Plus. But Advocata Institute, we are on TikTok, we are on Twitter, we are on Instagram, we are on LinkedIn as Advocata Institute. So please follow us. And on the website, you can donate us. If you think that it's a worthy cause to support Sri Lankan people, you can become a subscriber. It's with the current exchange rate, it's not very expensive. It's about $300. Even you can have options to subscribe for us lesser than that. So I kindly request you to consider us to support the work that we do. We have been the winner of the Templeton Freedom Award this year for all the work that we have been done. And it's a tough time at home, but we are optimistic. We are a resilient nation, but the resiliency works only if the markets work. So help us to mm-hmm. grow and bring this policy conversation forward. We are pretty much the one and only free market think tank in Sri Lanka. There are ideas connected to freedom, but we are the main think tank who is defending or bringing this ideology for liberty. So I think it's a worthy cause to support us. And of course, if you ever consider visiting Sri Lanka, please do so, because we need forex. It's safe. Of course, there are challenges. But even what I say is, even with all corrupt politicians, still we have absolute beauty, which cannot be taken away by anyone else. So please visit us. It's a beautiful country, and don't judge us by the politicians who govern us. It's mainly a market failure that the politicians, the incapable politicians, have come to this power because of the expanding of the government sector. but our people are absolutely beautiful. They are going through a tough time. By supporting Advocata and by visiting us, by taking this message forward, even if you are not considering to support us, liking, following us on social media, that would be a big encouragement. And but more than anything else, don't ever allow your government to expand, because you are definitely in the path for crisis. And I don't want to see that you are going through what I'm going through right now.
Yeah, well, we're doing our best to prevent that here in the U.S., Danana, and appreciate you coming on the show. And I just want to reinforce what you said. I mean, really being able to support a think tank in another country, is, think of it as, you know, planting seeds that really doing work that needs to be done. And, you know, to be able to see years from now, if you've been able to contribute and help, and to see the fruit that that comes to fruition from that, I think would be something to feel pretty good about. So think about doing that. I'll put links to everything that Danana mentioned there on the show notes page. And yeah, just want to thank you for coming on the show, and wish you the best of luck navigating everything, all of the issues that big government has caused there in Sri Lanka.
Thanks, John. I wish I had a better background and better lighting, but of course, given the challenges at the time differences, sorry about the visual quality, but I think the ideas are what matters. So please excuse me for the
your back difficulties. Your background is better than most of my guests, so do not worry about that.
Thanks, John. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Take care.
All right. Thank you for listening. Before I let you get on your way and get your last minute Christmas shopping done this week, I just want to let you know that we got a special for the Lions of Liberty Pride. Of course, the Lions of Liberty Pride is where we post our bonus content. We have several bonus shows. Brian has his daily, you know, morning rant that he does most weekday mornings. We have Degenerate Gamblers. We have Secrets, Lies, and Cover-Ups, our new conspiracy show. We'll be recording a new one of those. You get access to most of our interviews live. You can watch them in our Facebook group, or you can watch them at a unlisted YouTube link. And you can join. Two ways to join, either at Patreon or Locals. We have a discount right now to join for a year. The annual membership at Patreon is 15% off any level, from $5 all the way up to $100 a month. You can get 15% off. It's incredible savings. It's double what we normally do. And if you don't want to join through Patreon, that's cool. You can always go to Locals and check that out. Patreon is patreon.com/Lions of Liberty. Locals is lionsofliberty.locals.com. We're thankful for all you people who listen and support us and participate in our community in the Lions of Liberty Pride. And with that being said, I know everyone's busy, so get off, get out there, get your last Christmas shopping done. And if you're traveling, safe travels, and I'll see you next week. This is John Odermatt signing off. Always remember to keep your head up and the fires of liberty burning.